to the world, which was fortunate, for his power burned away quite quickly. Though the power he held seemed immense to him, it was truly only a tiny fraction of something much greater. Of course, he did end up naming himself the Sliver of Infinity in his religion. Perhaps he understood more than I give him credit for. Either way, we had him to thank for a world without flowers, where plants grew brown rather than green, and where people could survive in an environment where ash fell from the sky on a regular basis. 6. I'm too weak, Marsh thought. Lucidity came upon him suddenly, as it often did when Ruin wasn't watching him closely. It was like waking from a nightmare, fully aware of what had been going on in the dream, yet confused as to the reasoning behind his actions. He continued to walk through the Koloss camp. Ruin still controlled him, as it always did. Yet when it didn't press hard enough against Marsh's mind, when it didn't focus on him, sometimes Marsh's own thoughts returned. I can't fight it, he thought. Ruin couldn't read his thoughts, of that he was fairly confident. And yet Marsh couldn't fight or struggle in any way. When he did, Ruin immediately asserted control once again. This had been proven to Marsh a dozen times over. Sometimes he managed to quiver a finger, perhaps halt a step, but that was the best he could do. It was depressing. However, Marsh had always considered himself to be a practical man, and he forced himself to acknowledge the truth. He was never going to gain enough control over his body to kill himself. Ash fell as he walked through the camp. Did it ever stop these days? He almost wished that Ruin wouldn't ever let go of his mind. When his mind was his own, Marsh saw only pain and destruction. When Ruin controlled him, however, the falling ash was a thing of beauty, the red sun a marvelous triumph, the world a place of sweetness in its death. Madness, Marsh thought, approaching the center of the camp. I need to go mad. Then I won't have to deal with all of this. Other inquisitors joined him at the center of the camp, walking with quiet swishes of their robes. They didn't speak. They never spoke. Ruin controlled them all, so why bother with conversation? Marsh's brethren had the normal spikes in their heads, driven into the skull. Yet he could also see telltale signs of the new spikes, jutting from their chests and backs. Marsh had placed many of them himself, killing the Terrasmen that had either been captured in the north or tracked down across the land. Marsh himself had a new set of spikes, some driven between the ribs, others driven down through the chest. They were a beautiful thing. He didn't understand why, but they excited him. The spikes had come through death, and that was pleasant enough, but there was more. He knew somehow that the Inquisitors had been incomplete. The Lord Ruler had withheld some abilities to make the Inquisitors more dependent upon him, to make certain they couldn't threaten him. But now what he'd kept back had been provided. What a beautiful world, Marsh thought, looking up into the falling ash, feeling the light comforting flakes upon his skin. I speak of us as we. The group. Those of us who are trying to discover and defeat Ruin. Perhaps my thoughts are now tainted, but I like to look back and see the sum of what we were doing as a single, united assault, though we were all involved in different processes and plans. We were one. That didn't stop the world from ending, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. 7. They gave him bones. Tensoon flowed around them, dissolving muscles, then reforming them into organs, sinew, and skin. He built a body around the bones, using skills gained over centuries spent eating and digesting humans. Corpses only, of course. He had never killed a man. The contract forbade such things. After a year in his pit of a prison, he felt as if he had forgotten how to use a body. What was it like to touch the world with rigid digits, rather than a body that flowed against the confines of stone? What was it like to taste and smell with only tongue and nostrils, rather than with every bit of skin exposed to the air? What was it like to see? He opened his eyes and gasped, drawing first breath into remade, full-sized lungs. The world was a thing of wonder and of light. He had forgotten that during the months of near madness. He pushed himself to his knees, looking down at his arms. Then he reached up, feeling his face with a tentative hand. His body wasn't that of any specific person. He would have needed a model to produce such a replica. Instead, he had covered the bones with muscles and skin as best he could. He was old enough that he knew how to create a reasonable approximation of a human. The features wouldn't be handsome. They might even be a little grotesque. That, however, was more than good enough for the moment. He felt real again. Still on hands and knees, he looked up at his captor. The cavern was lit only by a glowstone, a large porous rock, set atop a thick column base. The bluish fungus that grew on the rock made enough of a glow to see by, especially if one had specifically grown eyes that were good at seeing in dim blue light. Tensun knew his captor. He knew most Khandra, at least up to the sixth and seventh generations. This Khandra's name was Varsel. In the homeland, Varsel didn't wear the bones of an animal or human, but instead used a true body, a set of false bones, human-shaped, crafted by a Khandra artisan. Varsel's true body was quartz, and he left his skin translucent, allowing the stone to sparkle faintly in the fungal light as he studied Tensun. "I made my body opaque," Tensun realized, "like that of a human, with tan skin to obscure the muscles beneath." Why had that come so naturally to him? Once he had cursed the years he spent among the humans, using their bones instead of a true body. Perhaps he had fallen to that same old default because his captors hadn't given him a true body. Human bones. An insult of sorts.